Today is Tuesday, August 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up, the G7 has new ideas for helping Africa.
They have awarded $251 million to the Affirmative Finance Action for Women in Africa.
Also ahead, U.S. President Donald Trump has spent the past few days dealing with foreign policy issues, and Brazil's president sets a condition for accepting aid to fight the Amazon wildfires. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump has spent the past several days talking about key issues for his administration, including his trade dispute with China, the possibility of talks with Iran over the deal to limit its nuclear programs, and even his suggestion of where to hold the next summit of the Group of Seven Advanced Democracies. VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman is on the line now with us to give us an overview of what's been going on. Thank you, Steve, for joining us.
Hi, Kim.
Thanks, Steve. Well, last Friday, the U.S. trade dispute with China ramped up. Can you summarize for us where things stand on that issue now?
Well, as far as we know at this point, talks are still tentatively going to be held here in Washington next month. I asked the president about that right before he left for the G7. And he said the Chinese still want to have talks, and he's always open to talks. Of course, there's been conflicting statements from both the president and the Chinese since then about whether they've been talking on the telephone in recent days and whether there's been any progress.
Okay, and also now looking over at Iran, the Iranian foreign minister, he was at the G7 gathering, and there were hints that Mr. Trump might agree to meet with Iran's president Hassan Rouhani in the coming months. So what is the latest on that?
Yes, both the G7 host Emmanuel Macron of France and President Trump seemed to indicate that was a possibility, the president telling reporters that it could possibly happen. Macron was expecting that could happen within a few weeks. Now, the best read we have on that is for the logistics that there could possibly be a meeting at the opening of the upcoming general session of the United Nations in New York City. That is something we're keeping an eye on.
Okay, and also let's look at Russia. Apparently, President Trump is facing criticism for calling for Russia to be readmitted to the leader summit without any preconditions. So what are your sources saying on this?
Right. There's not a lot of support for the president's position on that, especially without any preconditions. Russia was in the G7 for a while when it expanded and was called the G8, but even then there was some discomfort with that because the G7 was set up to be of leading industrialized democracies. And there are a lot of other countries that would seem to qualify before Russia, especially at this stage. And it seems like several of the G7 leaders would not be able to go for this unless there are some significant concessions by President Putin and Moscow, such as the reversing of the items that led to Russia being kicked out of the group, namely it's an invasion and takeover of Crimea and its support for these paramilitaries in eastern Ukraine. And there's also concern about the cyber attacks that Russia's been carrying out against Western democracies.
And also on another controversial note, the president apparently is upset about coverage of his idea for where to hold next year's G7 summit. So what is really the controversy?
Right. Well, the president's strongly indicating that he wants it at his private golf resort, Doral, near Miami in Florida. The president touting that at the news conference yesterday, talking about how it's close to the airport. It has lots of bungalows and ballrooms and ample parking. But, of course, there are concerns that this is the president promoting one of its private businesses and whether that's even legal.
Okay, so I guess we'll have to wait to see what's going to happen with that situation there.
Right, Kim.
So overall, looking at the whole summit, I know former Vice President Joe Biden, he's criticized the president, saying he has further isolated the United States. So what overall, looking at it so far, if you can just sum up real quickly for us.
Well, the president's bristling on Twitter today about the criticism that's been made even before Biden made a statement, especially by newspapers and other media commentators, saying that the summit proved that Trump and the United States are increasingly isolated, and also criticizing him for sitting out the climate meeting at the G7 summit. But the president is touting this as a great success, and that the United States was front and center.
Okay, thank you so much. That's VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman here in Washington. Well, also in the news today, the Group of Seven Summit in France over the weekend covered a wide range of topics, and African issues were prominent on the agenda. My colleague Kate Pound-Dawson spoke with reporter Catherine Field in Paris about the G7 discussions on Africa.
The main point about Sahel security was that Emmanuel Macron and the Burkina Faso president were able to say, we need more help. And the German Chancellor Angela Merkel also said there's got to be more of an engagement from other countries. And they didn't just mean the other G7. They're also talking about bringing into the conversation Cote d'Ivoire, Senegal, Ghana, that more has to be done with more partners. Specifically, the German Chancellor says that the Sahel nations need to formulate much more clearly exactly what they need. She pointed out that they are up against funding issues. They're up against a lot of other priorities for their time, for the troops. But the German Chancellor did say that they're prepared to help out with more logistical training in terms of policing and in terms of the military. So they do want reinforcement there. They do say they want a whole, if you like, almost root and branch reanalysis of what's happening in the Sahel, and that would include also the Alliance of the Sahel. And they say they're going to put that forward at the UN General Assembly in September. But they're also looking for a conference at the end of this year that would have a look at all the programs, bring it together, and just see where they can make some changes, if it's possible to make changes.
Mr. Macron was also looking at ways to expand gender equality in Africa. What came of that?
This really is Emmanuel Macron's big issue. He talks about gender equality and he talks about education for women and girls. He's also very heavy on the idea of easy access to finance for females, so to be able to support female entrepreneurs. And what did come out of that, in fact, it's being said it's the sole concrete initiative from the G7, has been that they have awarded $251 million to the Affirmative Finance Action for Women in Africa. That's part of the African Development Bank. Now, Emmanuel Macron said that this will make it easier for women to get financing, and it will give this initiative more of a structure, and it will also mean that it will give the people who give out the funding, it will be able to make them adapt their funding more to needs on the ground, because they will have so much more funding there. It's still not enough. They are still looking, this Affirmative Finance Action Group, they're still looking for $5 billion.
Now, the fires in the Amazon were a big issue over the weekend at the G7, but it was also brought up that there are fires going on in much of sub-Saharan Africa. What came out regarding Africa's jungle fires?
It came out of nowhere, in fact. It was Emmanuel Macron again when he was talking about the Amazon fires, who said, look, let's just stop for a minute and say there are also fires in Africa. And it did highlight the fact that there are these fires from Gabon to Angola. This is sort of, they are quite large, and it is often said that the Congo Basin forest is the planet's second green lung after the Amazon. What has come out is, first of all, it's given a platform for people to be able to actually find out what is happening with the fires. And they've been very quick to point out, listen, please don't compare it to the Amazon. This is not a rainforest. This is, you know, Africa. It is seasonal, and it's very limited, and it's actually associated with traditional farming methods. But what it has done is, on the one hand, Emmanuel Macron has said that they want to give some sort of aid. He hasn't put a figure on it. He hasn't talked about whether firefighters will go out and help. So in that respect, we haven't had anything concrete, but it has brought to the world's attention just that these Central Africa fires are there, and it's not just trees and peat forests that are burning, but also some endangered species are really threatened.
That was journalist Catherine Field in Paris speaking with VOA editor Kate Pound Dawson. Among the top stories in the world, Italy has banned a German humanitarian ship carrying migrants rescued at sea from docking in the country. Hong Kong's leader says she is open to dialogue with anti-government protesters, but that she will stamp out violence. And Kenya's census this year will recognize intersex people, not just those who consider themselves male or female. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition. The G7 nations have pledged millions of dollars of aid to help Brazil fight the fires in the Amazon. However, Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro has rejected the offer unless one condition is met. Charles de Ledesma with the Associated Press has more.
Bolsonaro says he will only accept an offer of international aid to fight Amazon fires if Macron retracts comments that he finds offensive. Brazil's leader says Macron had called him a liar. Macron, who had questioned Bolsonaro's trustworthiness and commitment to protecting biodiversity, has shrugged off the snub and has said in a speech Bolsonaro's interpretation of the comments is a mistake. The two have been feuding over social media in recent days. I'm Charles Ledesma.
While many of the fires sweeping through the Amazon are thought to have been started deliberately, environmentalists blame speculators who burn vegetation to clear it in hopes of selling the land to farmers and ranchers. Global anger and concern has been steadily rising because of the rainforest's importance to the environment. The Amazon is often described as the lungs of the world due to its vast ability to absorb carbon dioxide. It is also home to thousands of wildlife species that are supported by the forest. My colleague Lori London spoke about the implications of the fires for wildlife and especially endangered jaguars with Dr. Esteban Payan, South American Regional Director with Wildcat Conservation Organization Panthera.
Rainforests like the Amazon are the last reservoirs of the wildest of animals, of the jaguar, of course. And the jaguars, in what we saw, about 5,000 square kilometers burnt in Brazil, means that at least 100 jaguars have been homeless or are burnt. They're very mobile, they're quick animals, so they won't all be burnt, but they're homeless. What does that mean? They can't just move to another part of the Amazon because it's already occupied by other jaguars. Imagine if you were, your house burnt down and in your neighborhood you have to find where to live and all the houses are full. So the loss of jaguars is, of course, just the tip of the iceberg. Because jaguars are so big and they're carnivorous, they live at really low densities. So you can expect twice that amount of losses of pumas, five times that amount losses of small cats, and not even to mention the animals that could not escape the fire, that were burnt alive. Slow animals like sloths, the nocturnal animals living in crevices, cracks, holes, armadillos, giant anteaters, and even, turtles, tortoises, and caiman, all these reptiles that they were burnt alive. I bet you it's 90% of them didn't escape. And they're key food for jaguars. So it's all tied, not just our oxygen that's produced in the Amazon. It's all tied. It's the biodiversity. And, of course, it's the biggest and the last reservoir in this world continually degrading.
I heard someone call it a graveyard at this moment.
It should be, I think, easily.
Have you been able to get over there, or is it just too bad right now for anybody to really assess how bad this has been for wildlife?
Well, we're observing from afar for now because there's a very complicated local situation in the area. There's a lot of people pointing fingers at each other because there's agreements among livestock ranchers and agriculturalists that have created these man-made fires. So in the wake of this, it's NGOs are not welcome there for now. So we have to stand aside for a bit until this starts resolving. Because our biggest worry is that these areas, for not just for jaguars, for what we call the associated biodiversity, will be lost forever. These areas will not regrow, not because they can't, but because precisely these unscrupulous livestock ranchers and agriculturists, especially soy, will colonize illegally these lands, and they will be devoted to exploitative agriculture.
What about neighboring countries like Bolivia, Peru, Paraguay?
They have been very hard hit, especially Bolivia and Paraguay. Our partners in Bolivia have shown us devastating images. Again, because fire is so hard to control, and if it's not programmed, and if it's not really managed, it's shooting yourself in the foot, really. Independent of the country you're from, you're just eroding your own house. It's saying, I'll go and burn one of my rooms in my house down.
Are the fires just burning, or are there any real efforts to stop this?
Well, there's been rain in some parts of the fire area, which is great. We've got our fingers crossed for more rain. And there's efforts. I think the international community has put on a very strong pressure on both presidents, in Bolivia and Brazil presidents. And through the G7, I think Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, was masterful in managing that topic in the summit and really leveraging to react.
That was Esteban Payen with Wildcat Conservation Organization Panthera speaking with International Edition's Lori London. Well, today, members of the regulator Global Wildlife Trade approved a near-total ban on sending wild African elephants to zoos overseas. The vote came after a heated debate at a meeting of parties to the Convention on International Trade and Endangered Species in Geneva. The Animal Welfare Institute in Washington said 87 countries, or about 75% of cities' parties, agreed to restrict the trade in live elephants to foreign zoos and circuses. The EU supported the decision after it proposed amendments to make sure the ban would not affect elephants already in zoos and other facilities outside of Africa. The Animal Welfare Institute called the vote a remarkable victory that will prevent baby elephants from being separated from their mothers and held in captivity. You're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick.
And Hadiza Kiari.
And Ayan Bior.
And Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
Well, a Chinese-Australian writer and dissident who has been detained in his native China since January has been formally arrested on suspicion of espionage. A spokesman for China's foreign ministry says Yang Hengjun, a former Chinese diplomat, was charged last Friday. Yang, now a democracy activist and novelist, was detained at the airport in the southern city of Guangzhou en route from New York to Shanghai with his family. Australian Foreign Minister Maurice Payne said Canberra expects that basic standards of justice and professional fairness are met where regarding Yang's welfare. In Beijing, Foreign Ministry spokesman Geng Guang said Yang is in good health and that his rights are fully guaranteed. But Geng said the government has expressed strong dissatisfaction with Australia's response to Yang's arrest and that Canberra should respect China's judicial sovereignty and not intervene in the case. Well, around the world, the energy transition is underway. Concerns about climate change are helping wind and solar power move into markets once dominated by coal. But what's good for the climate is trouble for communities where coal is the backbone of their economy. The western U.S. state of Colorado is taking pioneering steps to help cushion the blow for those left behind in the energy transition. VOA's Steve Barragona visited the town of Craig for a look.
The Craig Station coal-fired power plant employs about 300 people. That's a lot of jobs in Craig, Colorado, population 9,000. Matt Kinchlow is an electrician at the plant. A new law aimed at curbing planet-warming gases casts a shadow over the facility and his future.
That's the one that scares me the most. If there's no power plant here to have, what would I do for a living? What would I do to contribute to my family and to help maintain the lifestyle that we have? And what's that going to happen to my community? My little town here in Craig, Colorado is at risk.
At the state capitol in Denver, Casey Becker leads the House of Representatives. She says the entire state is at risk from rising temperatures, increasing droughts, and wildfires.
I think if we don't deal with climate change, we are going to be wrecking the economy. I've mentioned snowpack. Obviously, that's critical for our ski areas. I've mentioned, reduced water levels. That's obviously critical to our agricultural economy. And just the cost of responding to natural disasters is really impactful to the state.
Colorado aims to cut greenhouse gas emissions 90% by 2050 under a law Becker helped pass this year. The implications for towns like Craig are not lost on her.
We know that there are going to be coal plant closures. We know this is happening. Let's think very intentionally and proactively about those communities. Is it going to mean displaced workers? Is it going to mean shuttered downtowns? How do we get ahead of it?
So Becker helped pass another bill. It creates the nation's first government office dedicated to smoothing the transition in coal communities. Rich Meisinger is business manager at the electrical workers union, IBEW. He says unions opposed the climate bill, but they backed this one because it aims to help with things like worker retraining and supplemental income for transitioning jobs.
Our members want to work hard. Our members don't want a handout, but I'm hoping that this is a bridge to get them to that next level.
Matt Kinchlow worries that a lot of the details have not been worked out yet.
I think in the base, it sounds like a good idea. That all being said, it didn't talk about funding. That was one thing I noticed, was where are we going to get the money at for that? Do I have to move? Do I have to learn a different trade? The re-education bill, well, what kind?
There's time to work it out. The plant has no immediate plans to close, but change is coming, and Meisinger says the union will not fight anymore to keep it open.
Knowing what I know, that's a battle we aren't going to win. So I want to find a battle we can win that helps our members out.
As the world moves away from coal, Colorado hopes to be an example for other places dealing with those left behind in the transition. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Craig, Colorado.
Well, heavy rains and sustained winds of 85 kilometers per hour are hitting the Windward Islands today as Tropical Storm Dorian moves into the Caribbean Sea. The U.S. National Hurricane Center says the storm could drop between 7 and 20 centimeters of rain on St. Lucia, Martinique, and St. Vincent. Forecasters expect Dorian to gain some strength today and to reach hurricane status by the time it moves near Puerto Rico, Haiti, and the Dominican Republic tomorrow. The storm could threaten the U.S. mainland by Saturday. You've been listening to VOA's International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Nadia Taha, engineer Sidrak Franklin. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Have a good day.
This is Science in a Minute.
If you're an optimist and tend to look at the bright side of life, a new study led by Boston University may have some good news for you. The study authors found evidence that suggests optimists indeed live longer. To reach their findings, the researchers analyzed data involving thousands of men and women that was gathered over a 30-year period. The study finds that most optimistic men and women, on average, had an 11 to 15% longer lifespan and had 50 to 70% greater odds of reaching 85 years old compared to those who were the least optimistic. So, it might be a good idea to take a clue from the comedy group Monty Python.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side